Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description.
Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
Yeah, welcome to Going In Raw Countout. This is the countdown pro wrestling show we do here at youtube.com/ Steven Larson. Be sure to hit the subscribe button because it helps boost the profile of the show, whether you're here on YouTube or, of course, you're on the iOS podcast app. And we're also available wherever fine podcasts are, including Podbean, Stitcher, etc., etc. A little backstory here. It was announced like last week that Vince McMahon is possibly getting a biopic.
Yes, which he's is on board.
A biographical motion picture.
Yes, he's on board. WWE Studios is co-producing the movie.
Correctamundo.
And according to Pro Wrestling Insider, PW Insider, it appears that he will probably have script approval on this project.
Now, we talked a lot about this in last week's Dirt Sheet.
We did a count out on it.
There's been all sorts of sort of script leaks, like alleged script leaks from early drafts, which will probably, for the most part, be completely scrapped in favor of something else.
Yes.
That is Vince approved.
Yes.
We're hoping for something that is, look, I just want something that's entertaining.
Yeah.
That's all I care about. But it also got us thinking, you know, with the Page movie happening, with there apparently being a Chris Benoit movie in the works quite some time now. What other wrestlers, because wrestling is a fascinating industry.
Yes.
And wrestlers, there have been some with some really, really interesting, bizarre backstories that would make for compelling motion pictures.
Yes.
Some of these, just it feels like, the truth is stranger than fiction in a lot of wrestling careers.
Yes.
So we came up with 10 wrestlers we would love to see biopics for, movies made about these wrestlers.
Yes.
However, little backstory here. We actually shot this last weekend.
Yeah, it was initially intended to go up last weekend. Yeah.
Yeah, but like when we did it, we weren't really happy with it. We didn't really sit. We were like, we just launched into it. And
in hindsight, we thought, I mean, we talked about each of these entries, why we wanted movies made about them. But we didn't really go into specifics about who we wanted to make these movies or who we wanted to star in it.
And like, look, we went to film school. Like, we know about movies, man.
Well, we know something about them.
So we thought it would be more fun to step back, think of actors,
directors, maybe writers,
creative teams behind these movies. I originally wanted to do like titles too, but I didn't really do that. But I came up with a couple of, like, on top of my head, I can come up with a couple of these.
Okay.
So let's just go into it.
Yes.
Number 10.
10.
Frank Gotch.
Yeah, he is, I think, generally credited with being the first world champion, pro wrestling champion, and being the guy who made pro wrestling mainstream in the United States.
The bottom line on Frank Gotch, and this can be said about guys like George Hackenschmidt, Farmer Burns, neither of us really know a whole lot about them. But the genesis of pro wrestling, especially in the United States, is something that is so fascinating to both of us that we feel like a turn of the century movie, because I think he had his big match with Hackenschmidt in like 1911 or something like that. Then by 1917, he was dead. He died at 40. Mm-hmm. And so there's so much up in the air in terms of what was real, what was fake, what was shoot, what was work.
And that seemed to change match to match.
Exactly. And so like nobody to this day, nobody really knows. You kind of take things like Wikipedia for granted. Like there are some things in this world we just don't know.
Yes.
There's actually a lot of things in the world we don't know. And one of them is, you know, not just what existed before the Big Bang, but whether or not these matches were real or fake.
I know.
And so it would be really, really fascinating for, you know, somebody to tackle this as a movie subject. When you told me your thoughts on who can especially direct this and write it, I was all in. I could not conceive of a better writer-directing
team. So I'll just launch right into that. For anybody who has seen Deadwood, the HBO series, it only lasted 3 seasons, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
you'll be familiar with the work of writer producer David Milch.
Correct.
And the way he I believe Deadwood was set shortly before
1880s.
Okay, so about 30 years. Yeah. About 30 years before, you know, the time frame of a Gotch movie. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, Milch's use of language, how he writes, mm-hmm. is so interesting.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Combine that with Steven Soderbergh as director. He is the creative force behind The Nick,
mm-hmm.
or one of, sorry, one yeah, of the creative yeah, yeah, forces yeah. behind The Nick, and directed the entire first season.
Right.
Combine those two elements, you know, there's your creative team.
There is a segment during The Nick. There's like sort of like a subplot during like two or three episodes where one of the characters is managing a wrestler, like sort of an underground
yes. Yes.
tavern wrestler, whatever yes. they would call them. And it is a like for guys like us, it is a fascinating little segment. You know, that was all real. And, you know, the ultimate, you know, the final thing with that is like he injects him with some drugs to get his adrenaline up.
Yeah.
But it's too much because he ends up winning the match and then immediately collapses and
yeah.
dies.
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff. So The Nick was actually created by Jack Amiel and Michael Begler. And then Soderbergh came on as director.
Yeah.
But if we could somehow combine the creative force of Soderbergh, Jack Amiel, Michael Begler, and then get David Milch to especially, you know, handle the character and dialogue aspects of things, that would be of you know, turn of the century, 1910s genesis of pro wrestling.
Fascinating.
That would be a fantastic. I would prefer like a 12-episode HBO series.
Oh, yeah.
But I would be totally happy with a movie as well.
Did you think of someone to star as Frank Gotch in this production?
No, I mean, I look at him and, you know, I go back to Chris Evans a lot. I went to Chris Evans for one particular wrestler here in the list somewhere else. But if you look at Frank Gotch, he looks like sort of...
See, I thought there was a passing resemblance to my choice, which was Chris Hemsworth.
Oh, no. Yeah, when you said that, yeah, you're right. No, that is really good. That is really good. Chris Hemsworth is perfect. Because look at this, what a stud. And that's what I think when I think Chris Hemsworth.
Yes.
What a stud.
Yes.
A couple Avengers end up on this list.
Yes.
Number nine.
Nine.
Mick Foley. So I don't know what that first one would be called. Maybe, was there one called The Shooter already?
Maybe.
I don't know.
I was trying to see if he had any nicknames. I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea. So we don't have a name for that one. For number nine, Mick Foley. It would be Have a Nice Day.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
That's, yeah, obvious.
That's obvious. Anybody who's read his first book, which is called Have a Nice Day,
is basically ready to be adapted to a script any
absolutely.
Day. And
absolutely.
And it's a fascinating story.
But we got to thinking, you know, because a lot of people know his stories. Let's talk about creative forces, creative minds that could be behind this.
Yes.
And you originally came up with Zach Galifianakis to start as Mick Foley.
Mick Foley, yeah.
And I immediately thought of the show that he's on now called Baskets, which if you guys have checked that out, it's fantastic. And it's comedy, but then there's like elements of drama to it. Mm-hmm. It's very artistically done. It kind of, because Louis C.K. is one of the writers, or is, I think, one of the creators of the show. And he's like one of the head writers, or the head writer, along with Galifianakis. And it reminds me a lot of his show, Louis, but without the autobiographical aspect to it.
Yeah.
So he takes that sort of comedy tragedy type thing. You know, Zach Galifianakis in Baskets plays a European-trained clown who comes to the States, and all he can hook up is a rodeo clown job. And, you know, he's got a lot of pride, but he's got, you know, nothing to show for it.
Yeah.
So he ends up having to move in with his mom, played by Louis Anderson.
Oh, yeah.
Which is amazing. It's fantastic. Anyways, the show is fantastic. So I would like to see the Baskets team behind the camera. Who would you go with?
I had Spike Jonze.
Oh, that'd be good.
Yeah.
That'd be good. Maybe get
Charlie Kaufman
to write it. I could totally see that.
That'd be very good.
That'd be good. Well done. Number eight.
Eight.
Magnum T.A. I don't know what the name of this movie would be called, but it'd be kind of a bummer of a name.
It would be because, you know, the story arc is essentially he was groomed to be the next top guy. And eventually be the NWA world champion.
Mm-hmm.
He was on that course.
Yeah.
Until he was driving his Porsche one night,
mm-hmm.
Lost control of the car in a storm, wrapped it around a telephone pole.
Right.
And broke the C4, C5 vertebrae in his mm-hmm. neck.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, he had to struggle just to learn how to walk again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the basic premise of that narrative arc we've seen before, but to see it set in the world of wrestling in his particular case, I think would be a really fascinating movie.
Mm-hmm.
To see a guy who was being built up to be the top guy, mm-hmm. face that kind of adversity,
yeah.
and to triumph over it.
Yeah.
It's a great story.
No, absolutely. No. That'd be good. I chose my director. You actually threw out this name for a different one while we were in the car talking about this, but I'm going to use him for Magnum TA.
Okay.
Ryan Coogler.
Yes.
Fantastic director. He recently did, of course, he did, was it called Fruitvale Station?
Yeah, he did Creed.
And he did Creed. And when he did, and thinking about Creed, everybody said, I never actually saw Creed. Heard it was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, you know what? I can maybe see some parallels there.
Yeah.
Perhaps. Very character-driven piece.
Yeah.
Magnum TA, get Ryan Coogler on that.
Yeah.
I'm all on board. I don't know who's going to play Magnum TA. Do you have an idea?
Channing Tatum.
Oh, that's perfect. That's right. I forgot you mentioned him too. That's perfect.
Yes.
That's great. So, there you go.
Channing Tatum would be great. He'd have to grow the mullet out and the mustache. But
oh,
he would,
it'd be amazing.
He would so do it.
But I'd want it to be kind of like Channing Tatum, like from Foxcatcher.
Yeah.
That's what we were talking about.
Yeah.
That would be good. I also thought about like the guy who directed Foxcatcher.
Oh, Bennett Miller?
Too. Yeah.
Yeah, he'd be good.
That was really good. Maybe a little too dark. Foxcatcher was such a dark movie.
Yeah, it was.
God, it was such a, but it was, I thought it was a fascinating
Oh, study. Yeah, yeah. Maybe like, you know, like this movie, the first half of it would be, you know, a pretty thrilling ride in the respect that, you know, you see his rise to stardom, you see his in-ring work.
Mm-hmm. We need a name. Here's the thing, because, yeah, I mean, the story about Magnum TA is basically, we mentioned, this was a really good point you brought up in the last time we filmed this, but the fact that it would be about a guy who's on the precipice of being, of having everything, and not only does he have to learn how to not have everything, he has to learn how to walk again.
Mm-hmm.
He has to learn how to basically be the human mm-hmm. he was, the functioning human he mm-hmm. was before the accident. That'd be fascinating.
Yeah.
Number seven.
Seven.
Scott Hall.
Fascinating story.
Absolutely.
You've seen the E60 story about him, right?
Yes, correct.
And I think that's the first time or one of the first times he talked about, before he was even a wrestler, he was working as a bouncer at a strip club or something like that.
Correct, yeah.
Got into an altercation with somebody outside the club.
Uh-huh.
And during the scuffle, he shot someone in the face. Scott Hall did.
The man, apparently the guy he was beefing with, I believe it was the ex or somebody related to his girlfriend. He produced a gun, and during, like you said, the kerfuffle, the gun went off in the dude's face.
Yeah.
Like in Scott Hall, Scott Hall was in the dude's face when it happened. So it was like, you know, and that, he said, gave him PTSD.
Yeah. He was diagnosed with that later on. Yeah.
Yeah. And that sort of took him on this path of not liking the guy he saw in the mirror, but finding value in the guy that he was able to be in the ring, and that led to his addiction issues.
Yeah.
And
he said he used wrestling as an escape from, mm-hmm. you know, the issues he had because of that incident.
Right, exactly. And then, you know, after he found the accountability crib, you know, he got therapy, and that's when he was diagnosed, et cetera, et cetera. So it's been a really, really fascinating story for Scott Hall. I would think the obvious title for this would be The Bad Guy.
Yeah.
That'd be a fantastic name.
It would be.
Give me Dan Gilroy. Give me the team behind Nightcrawler.
Yeah.
Like one of our favorite movies of the last couple of years.
Oh, yeah, easily.
Fantastic movie.
Great character study.
Great character study. Very dark. Lots of great ambiguity in that movie, you know,
yeah.
like motivations and all that kind of stuff. I think that would be like the most quality team to put together a Scott Hall movie.
Let me ask you a quick question. The end of Nightcrawler, when Lewis Bloom starts up his honed fleet of video production news trucks.
Yeah.
Did that really happen?
You know, I did in the vein of American Psycho, you know, you when you ask, did that really happen? I guess it can be interpreted a couple different ways.
Because the police in their interrogation of him make it fairly clear they got him for something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he walks out of the police station, puts on his sunglasses, and it cuts to a scene where it's nighttime. He's got his fleet of trucks going out to shoot some stuff.
Well, in the same vein, do you think the opening scene where he seemingly kills a security guard, did that really happen?
That I hadn't thought about.
Yeah. So, like I said, there's a lot of great ambiguity in
that. Yes, exactly.
Movie. I always took it at face value. I never actually thought about that.
Yeah.
But I always took it at face value. But I guess now that you mention it, it could be up in the air.
What got me thinking is well before I even saw Nightcrawler, I read this thing about Taxi Driver, you know, because the end of the movie is really violent. And there's a shot of De Niro where the cops come in after he shot up the place. And he's bleeding from his neck. And he holds his hands to his head like this and starts doing like that. And then from there, it cuts to a shot of him like in an area in for the taxi company he works for. He opens his locker and there's a newspaper article about how he saved Jodie Foster from the situation she's in, yada yada, and reading about how that never happened. Mm-hmm. That was him sitting there at that moment confronting the police, imagining that's mm-hmm. how he would be perceived as
right.
a hero.
Right.
And I thought of that when I saw the end of Nightcrawler. I was like, oh, maybe that's he's walking outside in the daylight, put his sunglasses down, and then he's perceiving himself as, you know, the guy who's going to go out and conquer the news industry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or in fact, he's going to jail for a number of years.
That's good. No, I like that. I like that a lot.
Anyways.
No, that's great. I like that a lot.
When I thought of Scott Hall's story, I thought of David O. Russell.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Because mostly because of The Fighter.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
The story is not necessarily similar per se, not similar at all, but David O. Russell has a pretty varied oeuvre,
mm-hmm.
and I would like to see what he could do with a lead character who is essentially living two lives.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And I think that could be interesting.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And David O. Russell, I love the comedy aspects of his movies,
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot. Let's be clear. There's a lot of comedy to be had in pro wrestling.
Oh yes.
So I like that. I really like that choice, especially with Scott Hall, who was, you know, he's a funny guy.
Yeah.
Like we've heard him in podcasts, especially recently when he's lucid and sober. He is a very funny guy.
Yeah, he's
guy.
Very funny.
So, yeah.
The very, very dry sense of humor, which would work really well for perfect. David yeah, Russell's be, yeah, work. Did you really pick good. Someone to play Scott Hall?
No, I didn't. I thought of the Joe. What's his name? Joe Magla.
Oh, from Magic Mike.
He's a little old, though.
I thought about him, too. The problem with casting some of these roles is wrestlers are not only in tremendous shape, which mm-hmm. a lot of actors are, but a lot of them are very tall.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could have someone playing Scott Hall who's 6 feet tall, but Scott Hall's 6'7".
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
the rest of the cast had to be about 5'6".
Yeah.
And I don't know, unless you just do a whole lot of forced perspective stuff, yeah. but then when you're trying to shoot wrestling scenes, that might be a little strange.
The only person I can think of, like you mentioned this, and I totally forgot about this person, but Armie Hammer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he's tall. He's like a big stud guy.
Yeah, but you know, maybe just because we're so familiar with Scott Hall and his work, it's really hard finding someone encapsulate
well, that's
Scott Hall.
A bunch of these actors, like Ric Flair later on. I think I'm good with who I chose, but even that's like, I don't know.
I see your Paul Heyman thing is the same director.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did you mention that in the car?
Nope.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I was like, who could go there? Oh, perfect right there. Wow, that's cool. Yeah, I don't know about Scott Hall. I don't know. That's tough. A lot of these wrestlers that we have on here are so distinct.
Yeah.
Like a guy like Magnum TA, for example, like he's not like he's number one. He because he never reached the zenith of what he could have done. You know, we only saw, not a lot of what
he only really wrestled for 5 or 6 years.
Right. Exactly. And he was such an understated guy. A lot of these, you know, like Scott Hall, you know,
like Ric Flair.
Ric Flair. Who in the heck can play Ric Flair? You know, I mean, Mick Foley, even we were, you know, Zach Galifianakis is so kind of, I mean, we almost kind of went with him for body build almost.
Oh, I also thought of Jason Segel, put a few extra pounds on him.
Yeah.
Actually, not really.
Yeah.
Because early in Foley's career, wasn't like he was overweight.
Well, what you'd have to do with these is go in such a non-literal direction.
Yes.
That's what you'd have
and
to do.
And I think that would work really well for Foley.
For Galifianakis, for Foley,
yeah.
I think.
Especially if you have Spike Jones and
exactly,
potentially Charlie
yeah.
Kaufman involved.
Oh, yeah, for
they
sure.
They can do such an interesting take on the material.
Right, totally. Number six, the Von Erichs. Probably call this, like, I don't know, Triumph and Tragedy or something like that. Because I know there's that great documentary.
Oh, yeah, if you haven't seen it yet, check it out.
I think it's called Triumph and Tragedy of WCCW,
yeah.
The story does, something like that. But the Von Erich family, you know, a lot of you out there know the story. Five Von Erich kids, I believe, altogether. One, actually, technically an Atkinson, because he died when he was like at six. Just tragic. And their father, Fritz, all died. You know, his father basically booked his territory around his family.
Yeah. Only to see several of his sons, or many of his sons, die.
And they were Texas royalty.
Yes.
This could be a fascinating and depressing movie. I thought of, so like, because this could be such a complex sort of movie with a lot of moving pieces,
mm-hmm.
I thought of the Coen brothers.
Mm.
They're
from Minnesota initially. Are they from Texas?
I don't know, but No Country for Old Men, like, makes me think they would be perfect.
Well, I think
this.
Blood Simple was set in Texas too.
That sounds right. Let's take a look.
I don't remember if they're from Texas or from Minnesota. They're from Minnesota.
Okay, yeah.
It just seems like, because they had a number of their movies from either Texas or the Southwest.
Okay, all right. But I think they would be fantastic for this movie, and I cast it a little bit. I got Jesse Eisenberg as Kevin Von Erich, and it would center around him because he's the one who lasted.
Yeah.
So he would get to see things like his dad deal with the tragedy of their youngest mm-hmm. dying, and then transforming in from I forget his first name, Jack Adkisson,
mm-hmm.
to Fritz Von Erich. Because mm-hmm. apparently when that happened, that's when he really just started living that, you know, that identity.
Yeah.
And then I booked Chris Evans to be Cary Von Erich.
That's actually pretty good.
I did that because, like, Cary Von Erich wasn't... Here's the thing about Cary Von Erich. He was not a good-looking man, but the women in Texas loved him. They wanted to do him so much.
Yes.
And you need somebody who you look at and the guys want to be and the girls want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Yes, Chris Evans.
That is totally Chris Evans.
Yeah.
And then I got Jeremy Renner as another Von Erich.
Also...
I don't know which one.
John C. Reilly needs to be Fritz.
Okay, I like that.
John C. Reilly, he even before he started doing the Adam McKay movies, he did a number of dramatic roles. He can
do dramatic acting. Yeah.
So it's not like I'm you know, saying that this needs to be a comedic take on Fritz Von Erich because it's not right for the material.
All right.
But there's a lot of similarities in terms of how they look.
Okay. All right.
In terms of directors, two different routes. In terms of dealing with, you know, you mentioned the Coen brothers in terms of dealing with a lot of moving pieces, mm-hmm. large ensemble cast. My first thought when I hear that is Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yeah, that's good.
Because he's really, you know, good. Especially early in his career.
Yeah.
Large ensemble cast, a lot of moving pieces.
Mm-hmm.
But if not him, in terms of doing really interesting character work, and not that it has to be a director from Texas, but maybe Richard Linklater might be familiar with that story, might bring a certain perspective to it that someone that might not have lived in the area mm-hmm. might not be able to do.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I like the PTA thing because you look at his entire sort of roster of movies, if you will, and you have all the elements there that you would need for a Von Erich movie.
Yes.
You've got like the Freebirds. Tell me that's not a Boogie Nights story there. You know, Fritz Von Erich. Tell me it's not there.
The inner family drama of like Magnolia.
Right. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
It's all there. So
yeah, no, I could totally see that. That's good. You know, if he sadly didn't die, who would have been great in a PTA Von Erich movie is Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh yeah.
Would have been great as Fritz. That'd been great.
Mm-hmm.
Number five.
Five.
Ric Flair. Now, I'm holding so steady on this. I want this to be, and I know you've got a good idea over here.
Actually, I have two good ideas.
All right. I want this to be Martin Scorsese. I want it to be basically Wolf of Wall Street, but
in wrestling.
The NWA story, essentially, in the Ric Flair era. I've got Ryan Gosling playing Ric Flair.
Not bad.
And I like this because, be it on Saturday Night Live, or in the latest one with the good guys, he can do comedy. He can do everything. He can do comedy as well as he can do drama.
Yeah.
Obviously, La La Land. I never did see that. It seemed kind of bunk. But a lot of people like La La Land.
Yeah.
And so he's not afraid to put himself out there to be bigger than life. And I think Ryan Gosling could. And he's also like Ric Flair has those eyes that are also kind of intimidating.
Yeah.
And Gosling, I think, has those eyes as well. You can see that in Drive.
Yeah.
Here's my cast. And it's a short list here. Jonah Hill is Dusty Rhodes. Tell me that wouldn't be great. Tell me that wouldn't be great.
Oh, my
God. And we have him late. You have him later in the list, and we'll get to that, and I think it's good.
Yeah.
But Jonah Hill is Dusty Rhodes. Nobody else could do that.
Yeah, probably not.
That would be good.
Yeah.
Because you got to look at, like, bodies. Definitely have to look for body type there.
Yeah.
But then you think of who has the charisma to pull that
off. Oh, yeah.
Jonah Hill.
Yeah.
I've got John C. Reilly here as Harley Race.
That's good.
That is a friendo suggestion on Twitter.
That's actually really good.
I forget who it was.
That's really good.
I like that. You and I were both cracking up over the idea of John C. Reilly being Terry Funk.
Yeah. That'd be great too.
Which I still love. And then I've got as Vern Gagne, because Ric Flair spent an early part of his career in AWA, yes. Russell Crowe.
Okay. It's not bad.
Because then we can get a good guys team up with Gosling and Russell Crowe. Yeah. I like this movie. Let me know what you got.
Okay. I didn't want to pretty much remake Wolf of Wall Street in the world of wrestling.
Fair enough.
I mean, I know I agree that should be the template to a certain extent.
Yeah.
So I decided to go with Andy McKay.
Okay.
Director of Anchorman, Step Brothers, but also the Big Short.
Yeah.
And there, that movie had a really frenetic pace.
Okay.
Did a good job of mixing comedy with drama. But then I also thought about, I had a really hard time finding someone that could play Ric Flair. And at first I was trying to find someone who might physically resemble him.
That's really hard.
And I decided, no. It's more important to encapsulate the character than look like him. So we need someone with tons and tons and tons of charisma.
Sure, of course.
And who could play, who could dial it back, but could also really project.
Okay.
I don't know if I found that man.
Okay.
But I know someone who, I found someone who had tons and tons of charisma. Mm-hmm. Doesn't look anything like Ric Flair, though.
Okay.
Chris Pratt.
Oh, that's good. I was trying to think of a role for him. Yeah. Okay. That's good. Oh, that's good.
And when I thought of Chris Pratt, I thought, okay, maybe James Gunn mm-hmm. could direct.
Oh, that's good. I like
the Ric
that.
Flair movie
that's
too. Good. He does like a good job of mixing comedy with action with drama.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. I like that a lot. I like it. Did you say you had another one?
No, those are the two. Just two different directors.
Oh, okay. Options. Okay. Okay. I got it. Okay.
I mean, initially, okay. I had Chris Evans playing Ric Flair.
Yeah.
And I like Chris Evans a lot.
Yeah.
I just don't, I've never seen him really, as you brought up, really project.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So that would be absolutely necessary for anybody who played
Ric
Flair.
Seeing Ryan Gosling like bulk up a little bit, well, he'd have to bulk up a lot.
But I mean, like Flair was never
ripped. Oh, I know. He had like ripped. Sort of, he had like perpetual dad bod.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Which we know based on Parks and Rec that Chris Pratt can
totally
achieve.
Do. He totally can. I like that. I like that a lot.
I just thought, like, you know, start the Ric Flair movie right as he's getting on that plane, right before it crashes.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I always think of the scene in The Aviator, the plane crash there, and I'm like, film the plane crash like that.
Yeah.
If you're Scorsese.
Yeah.
Number four.
Four.
Paul Heyman.
I think we accidentally came with the same thing.
I just put this here because you said it.
Yeah.
But the director... Danny Boyle. Yeah. I was looking through movies like recently. I was like, man, I'm having a hard time coming up with a director. I wanted something for Nicholas Winding Refn.
Oh, yeah.
But I couldn't think of anything for him. And so I was like, man, Danny Boyle, I got to get him a movie.
He would probably be pretty good for the Scott Hall movie.
Yeah, he would. He totally would. But I really like the Nightcrawler team. That's
my top.
But Danny Boyle for Paul Heyman, because like, especially I'm looking at, you know, you look at stuff like Trainspotting and...
Danny Boyle does energy on film probably better than anybody.
Exactly. And the energy that ECW captured, that Paul Heyman captures, is pivotal to this movie.
Yes.
I like your choice of cast.
Jonah Hill, yeah.
Jonah Hill as Paul Heyman would be great. That would be really good. I like that a lot.
And following Heyman as he got his start essentially photographing shows.
Right.
And, I mean, WWE made a documentary about his kind of career path, and it's mm-hmm. fascinating. That he went from photographer to manager, managing this awesome stable, the Dangerous Alliance, WCW, doing some announcing there, getting fired, going and running Eastern Championship Wrestling, mm-hmm. transitioning that to Extreme Championship Wrestling,
right.
The rise of that organization, how that went bankrupt, how he had to sell ECW to WWF, got a job there, commentating and then writing, got fired.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually coming back when Lesnar got brought back.
Yeah,
it's fascinating.
Oh, absolutely.
And he's such a captivating character.
He is, absolutely. And Jonah Hill could totally mimic those promos.
Oh, yeah.
Totally, absolutely.
And it'd be great.
And to see, you would need Heyman to sort of be a consultant on this.
Yes.
I would love to see those infamous backstage promos where he would convince all these guys to go out there and kill themselves. You know, probably making not a lot of money, knowing that they were going to get, you know, stiffed on their payment, more than likely. But to see him rev these guys up.
Oh, yeah, it'd be great.
I would trust Danny Boyle. I would trust Jonah Hill. And I think it'd be fantastic.
Yes, agreed, 100%.
Number three.
Three.
El Santo. I kind of didn't, like, go all in on, like, how to approach this. Besides casting Javier Bardem as El Santo, that's kind of as far as I got. What do you have for this?
I thought Alfonso Cuarón, because I really enjoy his work.
I like that. That's good.
I really enjoy his work.
That's really good, yeah.
The director of Children of Men, of Gravity.
Boy, Children of Men is a beautiful movie.
But it's fantastic.
So good, though.
As far as who to star in it, I had a harder time with that. Part of me, and I almost feel like it could be interesting. Granted, I don't know a whole lot about El Santo's story, which is one reason I'd love to see a movie about him.
Mm-hmm.
But no, being a luchador to me seems like your public persona is unknown to everybody.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so your private life is completely separate from your public life.
Right.
And it might be interesting to actually cast two different people, mm-hmm. one as El Santo yeah. and one as, what was his real name?
Let's see here. El Santo. His real name was Rodolfo Guzman Huerta.
Yeah. Like have, so, it, you know, obviously the person you'd have to play El Santo would have some wrestling background.
Right, sure.
And I'm a huge fan of Andrade Cien Almas.
Oh, that's good.
So he can handle the El Santo aspect of the narrative.
I just remembered somebody I want for El Santo.
Who?
Pedro Pascal. He was he was in Narcos on Netflix, but also on Game of Thrones. He's the guy who had his head exploded by the mountain.
That's actually a really good idea.
Spoiler alert if you're behind on Game of Thrones by 3 years.
Yeah.
But he's like tons of charisma. I just thought about him. Who did you have?
Well, I had a...
Because I love your idea of having an actual wrestler play El Santo.
Yeah,
that's good.
Gael Garcia Bernal.
Oh, he's good, yeah.
Yeah, he's real good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's good. All good stuff. I think we came up with. I like your director too. That's
yeah, Cuarón does good stuff. Really good
stuff.
He
does amazing stuff. He did the Leo one, right? No, who did the one with who did Birdman? Who
was that? That was Inarritu.
Oh, okay.
He's really good too.
Okay,
it's a toss up between.
There's my guy then. There's
yeah,
my
Birdman. Inarritu. Birdman is fantastic.
I still haven't seen that.
Oh,
it's I know.
So much
I need
fun.
To.
It's
I know.
It's so funny. He would actually be a real, considering you know the dynamic of. Being a luchador,
yeah,
that would be a good choice too.
Yeah, all those long takes.
Well, just based on kind of thematic stuff of Birdman.
Yeah, yeah.
You should watch Birdman. It's hilarious.
I know. I need to.
It's so much fun.
I like my choices on this next one.
Okay, go ahead.
Bobo Brazil. We could go the regular route of, you know, because his story is a fascinating one.
Yes. Oh, we didn't say number two.
Number two.
Bobo
Brazil. So you could go your standard biopic route. Of, you know, telling his story straight up, you know, guy who is facing all sorts of sort of racial strife, if you will. He was only allowed to wrestle other African-Americans until the crowd got so behind him that promoters were forced to have him wrestle everybody. And then he was, you know, a big time champion. However, given the recent filmmaking success of Jordan Peele with Get Out, which I saw a couple weeks ago. Fantastic movie, has the whole like racial dynamic in America mixed with horror movie, you know, the idea of cultural appropriation is sort of the overriding, you know, socio-political theme of the movie, but all wrapped up in a fantastic horror movie. I thought give him the Bobo Brazil IP. Give him the script. Have him write, because I think he wrote maybe he didn't. I don't know if he wrote Get Out, but he directed it. And then screw it. He's a performer. Have him star as Bobo Brazil. That's my choice. Who do you got?
Ryan Coogler to direct.
Okay, good.
Bobo Brazil was 6'6".
Yeah, Jordan Peele's probably not.
and so in terms of casting, I ran into the same trouble I did with Scott Hall. Just in terms of you got to, you know, their size is part of, you know, who they were as performers.
Right.
So I couldn't really think of an actor.
All right. Well, we'll just go with mine in that case.
Okay.
Number one. Bruno Sammartino.
Fascinating story.
Absolutely fascinating story. I'm going to go with the idea that you and I came up with, or maybe it was just you.
It was me.
Okay. In terms of the director, Darren Aronofsky.
Well, here, let's talk a little bit about Bruno's story first.
A fascinating story. I would highly suggest somebody. Number one, out of all these, except for maybe 10, just because I'm a big, like, I really love the history of professional wrestling. I like to know more about it. This is the one that absolutely could totally be made into an amazing movie. Like, this would be great. The story of Bruno Sammartino being a young child coming up in
Italy.
Italy, when the Nazis were invading, essentially. He tells a story on Legends with JBL about how His mom, his dad, I think had already moved to America.
Correct.
He was staking out a claim basically for the family. And then World War II was happening. So his mom was tasked with taking care of the kids, and her and others in the village had to basically climb up this, you know, hill, mountain thing, whatever, where there were other villagers hiding out, hiding from the Nazis. And she would have to venture down once a week or once every couple of days to get food. She was caught once, was able to con her way out of it. And you know, eventually the entire family made their way to I believe, Pittsburgh.
Correct.
Okay. Which is, you know, like my jaw was open and my eyes were open and I was just like, you know, amazed at this story. And then Bruno obviously went on to become like the winningest champion.
Yeah, he had the longest title reign, I think, in wrestling history.
Yeah,
almost 8 years.
I believe so. If you take Fabulous Moolah, who basically just owned her belt.
Owned the belt, yeah.
And the only reason why Bruno's run was interrupted is because he literally told him, look, I need a break.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you
can't wrestle like 8 matches a week.
Exactly. And he goes, I need a break. And so you came up with Darren Aronofsky. He's, you know, one of my – I didn't watch Noah.
You haven't seen that one either.
I wasn't huge on Black Swan, but The Wrestler, loved that movie.
Yes.
I mean, for obvious reasons and not obvious reasons. The Fountain – love that movie to death. You and I saw it together. Requiem for a Dream. You and
love
I saw it.
It
together.
Pie. Love it.
Loved it. Pie. Loved it. Aronofsky already has a handle on the wrestling thing.
Yes.
I would love to see him tackle
He
this.
Handles a character very well.
Yes.
He's got a great eye.
Yes.
It would be, it'd just be a fantastic story.
Absolutely.
It'd be awesome. Do you have any ideas of who could play Bruno?
I do not. I have
I know,
no idea.
Is, that is a tough one.
That is really, really tough. Top male actors 2016. Let's take a look.
Okay.
You know, he wasn't a very tall guy.
I know, he's only about 5'10", 5'11", yeah. Right?
Jake Gyllenhaal. You don't like Jake Gyllenhaal for this?
I had one name come
Adam
to me.
Adam Sandler.
One name come to me this morning that I'm not sure if I'm really
terrible.
Into, per okay. se. But I'll present it and see what you think. What about Dave Bautista?
My only problem with that is he's too old, I think. He's old. You need somebody who's like a younger stud.
Yeah.
I would think. I love Batista.
Yeah, Batista's great.
Batista's great.
I mean, he's really good in Guardians of the Galaxy because that role plays to his strengths, I think, as an actor. But I don't know. I haven't seen enough of his work to know if he could handle the emotional spectrum that the lead actor would have to, I'd assume, for a Bruno movie.
Yeah. I was trying to find a role for... the dude in, he was in, no, The Killing. What's his name? He was in The Killing. He was also, I'm sorry, he was Underwood's opponent in the latest season of, what's that dude's name?
Oh, what's his name? He's good.
Yeah, he is. He's really good.
Shoot. What's his name? He seems like he's tall too.
Yeah, I know. He's a tall dude.
That's season 4.
Yeah. You know, I'll be honest with you. Hold on. I know we're not a huge fan of him. Look at his face.
No, I know.
Miles Teller's face kind of is Bruno-esque. Look at Miles Teller next to Bruno Sammartino.
What was the... Joel Kinnaman.
Thank you, Joel Kinnaman, yeah.
Yeah, he's good.
Look at this look at this face.
No, I know.
And then look at this face.
No, I know.
I'm going to go all in. Miles Teller is Bruno Sammartino.
Okay.
He needs to bulk up a lot.
Yes.
He needs to get one of them suits that George Michael got in Arrested Development. I always say that. I think it's the muscle suit. Miles Teller.
Okay.
Be Bruno.
Okay.
Breakout role. He'll change your mind on him. Miles Teller.
All right.
No good?
No,
look, that dude looks exactly like Bruno.
No, I said, all right, I'm conceding the point because I can't think of anybody better.
I really don't even like Miles Teller. I think he's one of those cases of Hollywood trying to push a dude who's so not like, doesn't have a lot of charisma. But with the proper creative force behind him, with Darren Aronofsky behind him, I think $1 million right there.
All right.
How about Hugh Jackman as Bruno Sammartino?
You think Batista's too old?
He was super old, man. He looks great, though. Anyways, that's what we think. Let us know what you guys think in the comments. Until next time, I'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.